This episode contains discussion of sexual assault and sexual harassment, as well as mentions of suicide.
Hey, welcome to Hellbent, a feminist podcast for those who resist and persist. I'm Sarah.
And I'm Devin. And today on the pod, we're going to be talking about Conyers, Franken, and Time's Person of the Year. I also got a chance to sit down with Jessica Piclo, who's a senior legal analyst at Rewired News. And we talked about the Masterpiece Cake Shop case that's currently hearing arguments in the Supreme Court. So a super interesting case, and that's probably the nicest thing I can say about it. But it was a great interview, so I'm really excited to share that with you. Sarah, how are you feeling today?
Besides all the shenanigans that continue to happen on Capitol Hill and beyond, personally, I'm still sick. It's week two of my unknown stomach bug slash flu slash virus slash... They've actually ruled out a bacterial infection. They thought it was a bacterial infection, and my test came back, and it all came back negative, which is interesting because they had thought it was probably that. So I went to see a specialist this morning, and so hopefully he's going to get to the bottom of what's going on with me. But
yeah,
it's been a journey, but I have to say I'm very grateful to have health insurance. So, you know, I can't be too bummed about everything because I do have that, and that's something to definitely be grounded in gratitude for.
Yeah, it's been sort of hectic around here too. I actually live really close to where the Skirball fire is.
Right.
And yesterday we were worried that we were going to be evacuated. My husband's cousin, who also lives in the same city, she was evacuated, but she lives farther up in the hills, and so it was more of a precaution than anything else. But we've been sort of bracing for evacuation, although now it looks like we won't have to be, which I'm very grateful for. But it's been scary.
It's been nervy. I mean, Nick and I are, I think, far enough away where it hasn't been so much of an immediate concern. But
yeah.
When you walk outside, you can definitely smell the smoke, and it's definitely ashy in the air, and pictures and videos are really quite alarming.
Although one of my favorite things I've seen on Twitter in a while was someone took the still of the person on the 405 who took that picture of the blaze in the background, and they changed the sign that had Wilshire, and they put heading into 2018.
Yes, it's so true. I've so definitely awful. Seen people being like, I'm ready for 2017 to be over. I'm like, you think 2018 is going to be any better? Remember all of us at the end of 2016? Like, don't make the same mistake, people. Like, let's brace ourselves a little bit. It's just been alarming to watch just all the natural disasters just in general over the past several months, and certainly here hitting close to home. And, you know, all the Hellions who've reached out to make sure we're okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
So far, we're okay. And we definitely we're thinking of everyone in the surrounding areas who are... who have been in harm's way, who have been in any way affected by the fires, and who have had to evacuate. You know, it's definitely scary times. Devin, we talk about this a lot on the pod, but you know, with all that's going on, how have you been handling self-care?
Well, I spend a lot of time with my dogs and my kid, as well as watching a lot of Netflix.
Yes.
I also make sure to talk about my anxiety with other people, including my therapist, which I talk about a lot. But sometimes that's not enough. And I actually use an app called Talkspace to fill in the gaps. It's a great solution if you don't have time to get to a therapist's office.
Yes, I love it. So Talkspace is the online therapy company, and they make it really easy to connect with a licensed therapist handpicked just for you. Using Talkspace, you could text, audio, and video message your therapist as much as you want. Your Talkspace therapist can listen to you vent about work or family, explore your relationships with the people around you, and help put you on a path to a happier life.
Yeah, it's really great just to have that little extra support if you need it.
Sure.
So to sign up or learn more, go to Talkspace.com/hellbent. And as a special offer for Hellions, you can use coupon code HELLBENT to get $30 off your first month and show your support for this show. That's Talkspace.com/hellbent and use offer code HELLBENT. Talkspace, therapy for how we live today.
Okay, Devin, so let's get into some listener feedback and updates on our end. So what do we got today for listener feedback?
A listener, Henriette, emailed us and she said, "Hey, love your podcast. It's so fun listening to you on my lunch breaks on Tuesday and Fridays. Anyway, I listen to a lot of podcasts and I love the Flynn got a sweetheart deal narrative. But you should listen to the Monday special from Stay Tuned with Preet. He lays down three different ways this plea agreement could turn out. In all this schadenfreude, it's important to keep our heads cool and remember that this could end with nothing. But I so hope that Flynn is singing like a bird and that Mueller has a list and he's checking it twice."
Counterpoint. So. Counterpoint. Can we just marinate in the schadenfreude?
Yes.
And just,
you know,
like,
I love it.
Live there. I'm just kidding. No, totally. I actually listen to Stay Tuned with Preet because I actually think his podcast is one of the best. I really, really, really love it. And I agree. His Flynn episode is really good. And he does lay out some really interesting scenarios. And certainly he is more qualified to speak to the legal perspectives.
We're not lawyers and we don't even play them on this podcast.
We don't even get the gigs. We're like, we try out for our own podcast to play prosecutors and they're like, sorry. Yeah, no. That's a really good call though. That episode is great. But yeah, I mean, a girl can dream. That Mike Flynn is singing like a bird. And that is a great shout because Preet Bharara is the real deal.
He is the real deal. And I do think it's important to keep in mind that there are a lot of different ways that this could go.
Definitely.
But you know, like Sarah said, schadenfreude, y'all. Like
schadenfreude. Yeah. That's definitely, you know, our angle.
Absolutely. And then we just want to do a shout out to our $10 a month Patreon supporters for November, and we had one. It was Katie Anderson, so thank you so much for supporting us. And we have a little update about Patreon. So this week, actually, Patreon changed its fee structure, and they put the processing fees that normally we pay as creators onto our patrons.
And we're not happy about it. None of the creators are happy about it. It's a whole thing.
I would much rather pay the processing fees than make our supporters do it, because yeah, that's just part of, you know, being a creator and doing this is paying those processing fees. And so we're not happy about it. And we're really, you know, not happy that this cost is transferred to our supporters. So we're so sorry about that. But we're talking to Patreon. Hopefully enough creators are like, yeah, this sucks. So we'll see what happens with that.
Yeah, I think a lot of creators are lobbying Patreon. So hopefully the company will revert back to its old policy. I don't know why they would do this. I mean, yeah. I'm assuming there's a business reason behind it that makes sense for them, but right, it definitely hurts the creators that are on their platform and certainly the patrons, because I think it de-incentivizes everyone. Basically, it sucks. We're not happy about it. We think it's going to drive down activity for everyone, but we want to extend a thank you to everyone who supports us and folks who are thinking about supporting us and want to support us. I hope this doesn't discourage you from doing so. Again, it's not our decision. We're not happy about it. We're going to fight the man, so to speak, hope that they make this change back. But we just wanted to give you a heads up that this is happening. Okay, Devin, so let's get into our main news block. And we really wanted to talk about a pair of stories that we felt like went together really well. So first of all, Time Magazine picked their person of the year. And that was what they referred to as the Silence Breakers. So the Me Too movement. And then we're going to transition into two Democratic congressmen who have announced their resignations from Congress. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's hard. It was hard doing this episode, too, because there's so much going on. There's always so much going on.
Right.
But we felt it was really important to focus on this. This is a really big moment. And yes. I think that speaks to why we made this particular editorial choice, because obviously there's always too much to talk about. So yeah. Let's start with the Time Person of the Year. Like you said, Sarah, it was what they referred to as the Silence Breakers. And they got a lot of different women to talk about their experiences and their Me Too moments.
Yeah, so who was on the cover of the magazine?
On the cover, they had Ashley Judd, Susan Fowler, Adama Iwu, Taylor Swift, and Isabel Pascal, which is a pseudonym for a strawberry picker who marched in solidarity with the celebrities who came forward against Harvey Weinstein. You know, I think they did a really good job in this article of talking to lots of different women with lots of different backgrounds.
How did you feel about the cover selection? Because I know there was a lot of conversation around who they actually chose to be on the front page.
I mean, I would have liked to see Tarana Burke, who yes. was the original creator of the Me Too movement. I definitely think that that was an oversight. I was a little surprised to see Taylor Swift. I mean, I know that she came forward and talked about her experience with sexual assault earlier this year, but I was a little surprised to see her. What I did like is, a lot of people have been talking about the arm that was kind of cut off to represent the men and women who felt that they couldn't come forward.
Yeah.
And I did like that choice. So I think it was an interesting cover.
I like that choice too. I totally agree about Tarana Burke. I thought it was definitely an oversight not to include her on the cover. I mean, what are you doing?
Right.
Taylor Swift. So here's my thing about Taylor Swift. In isolation, I think her case with sexual assault and her trial was just an incredible act of bravery. Like, I have so much admiration and respect for what she went through, and just that trial transcript, I was like, damn, that was so badass. Like, I thought she was an incredible role model with how she handled herself.
Yeah.
And she won, and she fucking sued the shit out of that guy. And I think, her story is important. Do I think she should be on the cover of Time magazine?
Right. As the face of the Me Too movement?
No, I don't think so. Because when has she spoken out for this movement? I find that her feminism, quote unquote, is so empty and self-serving. Like, if you're going to pick a blonde white pop star, for example, why not someone like Kesha, right? Who has risen from the ashes like a phoenix,
When I saw the cover, I saw Taylor Swift and I was like, that should be Kesha. That was my first thought. If you're going to take that tact, if you're going to be literal,
but even someone like Gabrielle Union, she had a great quote, I thought, in the New York Times this week. She said, quote, and this was something we have touched on recently in an episode based on listener feedback about this whole Me Too movement and how it's really centered cishet able-bodied white women and how it hasn't really extended out meaningfully to other groups of women and marginalized people in general.
Right.
And so Gabrielle Union said, quote, I think the floodgates have opened for white women. I don't think it's a coincidence whose pain has been taken seriously, whose pain we have showed historically and continue to show, whose pain is tolerable and whose pain is intolerable, and whose pain needs to be addressed now. And I think Time could have really pushed that more and literally centered people who have been at the forefront of the movement and who have been marginalized more and who have done more work in this space. I just don't know why they would put Taylor Swift there,
Right. And I think putting Taylor Swift there and not putting Tarana Burke really shows their lack of understanding of who needs to be centered in this movement. It's also telling for me that Time's runner up for Person of the Year was Trump.
Like, why? Like, what are you doing? You're going to give it to a sexual predator?
And the article that they wrote on him being runner-up, it was more like he's the runner-up not because he's a great person, but because he's changed the fabric of society. But I'm like, that's such a bullshit hot take.
Yeah.
To make such a powerful statement with Silence Breakers and then to turn around and make Trump the runner-up is just, I don't know.
Like, just because he's the president doesn't mean you have to give him a platform. like, and make him remarkable, right? Like, they gave him Person of the Year last year. Like, fuck that, you know?
Right.
And exactly. I think, yeah, and I completely agree with that. You know, I have to say, you know, I've seen some legitimate critiques of, you know, them giving Person of the Year to the Silence Breakers. I've seen critiques of, like, the word Silence Breakers. Like, I've seen women say, what do you mean, Silence Breakers? Like, we've been talking forever. Like, y'all are just listening to us now. Like, we haven't been silent. So I've seen that critique. That makes sense. I've seen people like Imani Gandhi saying, you know, why don't you just give it to Tarana Burke?
Right. Who created the movement.
Give it to her. Center her. And I think that's a legitimate critique. I think there's a lot of legitimate critiques. I have to say that for me personally, seeing that this movement being given the award, or just like, I don't know, like seeing women in general just fighting back so fiercely,
yeah,
made me cry. Like, I just was like super emotional about it.
It was a very powerful story, and reading it was moving. And you know, I do think it's worth noting that it's been more than 30 years since an individual woman has won Person of the Year.
Oh, really?
And there have only been four. Yeah, there's only been four.
I didn't know that.
Been more than 30 years. So, I mean, I think that's telling. Instead of giving it to like one single woman, they're giving it to this group.
Sure.
But I also do think that it's worth noting that every single person in the production of this story, from you know, executive producers to fact checkers, were all women.
Yeah.
You know, while there are definitely great critiques of this piece, I think that that is, at least they understood that maybe we need to start
the magnitude of it.
Yeah, exactly. And we need to start giving women the platform to tell our own stories.
Sure.
So it was a complicated piece.
As feminism usually is, it's complicated. Absolutely. It's flawed. There's plenty to always improve upon and critique. But yeah, it was, it's a pretty remarkable moment we're living in. That's for sure. Yeah.
It really is.
All right, Devin. So let's transition into the trash part of this section.
Segment.
Although, you know, some silver linings here, because we're sweeping away the
garbage.
The garbage.
Yeah. I mean, I think the two stories we want to talk about are first John Conyers resigning from the House of Representatives.
Yeah. Although there's a semantic question I have, because I've seen that he's retiring. Is he retiring? Is he resigning? If he's retiring, that's a little bit of a cop out,
right? You know, in the coverage
I've seen both.
I've seen both. Yeah. So I don't know. And I do think semantically it's important. I mean, it's hard to say, because he's been serving for over 50 years. You could make the case that he's retiring, blah, 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 blah. But in a more real sense, he's being pushed out.
Sure.
Whether he calls it retiring or not.
He's leaving. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
It's interesting because this came after he was being pushed out by Democratic leadership, which I think is important, in that Democrats are standing up and at least right this second living the values that we hold so dear.
Or that we claim to be, at least.
Claim to hold so dear. Nancy Pelosi, she made a statement and she said that women were owed the justice of his resignation. And she called for the House to approve legislation reforming the system for filing and settling workplace complaints in the House of Representatives.
And so we've talked about this on the podcast before, because this whole process is fucking broken. The way, you know, people who have been harassed and or assaulted by, you know, Congress people, it just completely does not incentivize like victims to come forward.
It's a long, complicated process that favors the abuser.
Yeah.
And actually, when I was on the Political Beat, which is Drexel's show, we had a really interesting discussion about this quote unquote Me Too legislation and how it's changing that process. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think that's an important point to make. I think that the story is important in that he is resigning or retiring or whatever he wants to call it, but he's getting the fuck out. And it was after he was called to do so.
So first of all, there was a woman who received a $27,000 confidential settlement.
Right.
Her name was Marion Brown. And she described on the Today Show her accusations against Conyers. And she said, he was violating my body, propositioning me, inviting me to hotels with the guise of discussing business, and then propositioning me for sex. She said he just touched me in different ways. It was very uncomfortable. It was very unprofessional. Like, this does not seem like an isolated incident. Like, it seems like this has been something that has been going on. And also John Conyers, very strangely enough, after he announced that he was going to leave Congress, said he would be, endorsing his son to replace him. And then it came out, it was reported that his son was arrested but not prosecuted in a domestic abuse case. So maybe we should not, maybe we should find someone else for that seat, is what I'm thinking.
Yeah, so this cycle of violence and continuing that cycle, it's easy to do, right? It's easy to continue the cycle, and it's hard to break. You know, and I think the settlement payments and the fact that they come out of a special Treasury Department fund, so the taxpayers are paying for these settlements.
And we have no idea about. All of this is secret.
So I think that's also an important point that needs to be addressed moving forward.
Sure.
And because it really takes the consequence out of it, right? Mm-hmm. Like, if you aren't personally responsible for paying these settlements, if you know that your office, like your job, is going to pay for them, like, what incentive do you have not to do it? It's a complicated process to even get reported. And then if you do get caught, the state pay, you know, taxpayers pay your bills.
You can just go on being a congressperson, because then no one finds out.
Exactly. So it's definitely a fucked up system that needs to be revised. And I think that transitions nicely into talking about Senator Al Franken, who resigned from his seat as a senator from Minnesota this morning.
Well, he announced his intention to resign. He said he will in the coming weeks. So we'll see if he actually follows through on that.
It would be interesting if he didn't, though. I mean, I think that making this statement and then not doing it.
Well, I thought I saw on Twitter that there's some precedent for other Congress people not doing it.
Interesting.
We'll see. I mean, I'm not saying he won't, but, it's not over till it's over.
I wouldn't put it past him. I think that it would, that's such a fucked up thing to do, is to say you're going to and then not do it.
Right.
I mean, you know, but I think another important part of this story is, like we said with John Conyers, is that Democrats, so his own party, were calling for his resignation. And of course, female senators were leading the charge against him because, you know, women get shit done. and they were only calling for his resignation after 8 women came forward. I mean,
it was 8 women with very similar stories.
Right.
Like, you know what I mean? It was a similar pattern of behavior. It was groping. And none of these women fucking know each other, for all we know. Like, it's not like they all got together and conspired to be like, we're going to take down Al Franken, you know? And it's, it took 8 women. And that's the thing. It's like, how many women does it take? In this case, it takes 8 women.
Before I read Al Franken's statement, Maisie Hirono actually made a statement, I believe yesterday or the day before, calling for his resignation. And I think what she said was very powerful. She said, quote, "We're at the point where I think that there can be a cultural change in terms of how women are perceived and treated in this country. This kind of bad behavior has been tolerated and ignored for far too long, but not today." And so I think that's a great statement. And it also plays into how trash Al Franken's statement when, you know, he made this proclamation that he's planning on resigning. Because he kind of starts this mess by denying the allegations. He says, quote, "I also think it gave some people the false impression that I was admitting to doing things that, in fact, I haven't done. Some of the allegations against me are simply not true. Others I remember very differently."
Ugh, it's such gaslighting bullshit. Like, if they're not true, you should come out and say they are not true. Why are you announcing your intention to resign if they are in fact not true? Like, that is such fucking bullshit. You cannot play both sides of this.
Exactly.
It makes
exactly.
me so fucking mad. Like, he's just making himself out to be the victim. He's making this about himself. Like, have some fucking dignity, and own your shit. If you're going to announce your intent to resign, own your shit. If it's not true, say it. But eight women have accused you of pretty much the same goddamn thing. So own your fucking shit, you piece of shit. Like, this statement made me so mad. It made me so mad because you can't stand up there and say you're all about, like, women and supporting women and then say this shit. Fuck you.
This next part is what made me really mad. I mean, don't get me wrong. This gaslighting, like, self-centering bullshit is not okay.
Not great, Al.
But this next part really set my hair on fire. So he said, quote, "I am proud that during my time in the Senate, I have used my power to be a champion of women and that I've earned a reputation as someone who respects the women I work alongside every day. I know there's been a very different picture of me painted over the last few weeks, but I know who I really am." Fuck
no.
You.
No, no.
Uh-uh. No. I think when we first reported on this, I said I was so angry, and it felt like such a betrayal because someone who's portraying himself as a champion of women is actually a harassing, abusing piece of garbage.
Assaulting.
Yeah. And it makes me so angry that people can use this specter of feminism and championing women and while in the background abusing women and then straight out denying it. And even in a goddamn plan to resign speech, him saying it didn't happen. And this level of I don't know, doublethink that he's performing on himself is so disgusting.
It's disgusting. He honestly makes me sick because you do not get to stand up there on the Senate floor after you have been accused of assaulting women, groping them, say, "Oh, this stuff, it really didn't happen," or "I don't remember it that way. Oh, but by the way, I'm totally a champion of women and I'm the one being victimized here." Fuck you, dude.
Yeah, because, you know, I've said it before and I'll say it again, but if you're going to be a shitty person, like, own up to it. Be the best shitty person you can be.
I want to read what Laura McGann from Vox said. She tweeted, "The fact that Al Franken doesn't think he did anything wrong makes the case for why he should go." And that's exactly how I feel. And it's like, it just puts the nail in the coffin for me. Like, Al Franken, you have shown me who you are, and I truly believe you. I truly believe you. Don't let the door hit you on the way out. Like, here's the thing.
Or do.
There's all these people. I want to talk a little bit about all the people who are, like, just mourning Al Franken and, like, apologizing for him. No man, no sexual predator is irreplaceable. Like, I do not shed any tears for Al Franken leaving the Senate. Like, fuck him. Fuck him times infinity. We don't need him.
Well, and you know, there was all of this shit after Leanne Tweeden came forward, like, "Oh, I don't know if he should resign. Is it really that big of a deal? We need to investigate. We need
to
do
an ethics committee."
Or the
people who were trying
to
say it was like this whole conspiracy. I'm like, y'all sound like the other side. Like,
exactly.
What are you talking about?
And honestly, like, if we are going to be Democrats, if we are going to lead this country the way we want to lead it, then fuck you and your sexual, you know, assaulting ass, and get the hell out of my Senate. I don't care who you are.
Yeah.
I don't care what side of the aisle you're on. I don't care if you call yourself a champion of women until you're blue in the fucking face. Get the fuck out. Well, I am so done.
Yes. Devin, preach. Well, here's the thing. I've seen this argument from liberals, and it makes me want to rip my fucking hair out, which is like, this is why Democrats lose. Like, there's all these sexual harassers and assaulters on the other side, and they're not doing anything about it, and we're like eating our own. Here's the thing. Republicans are never going to hold Trump responsible or accountable, or any of them, for their own sexual harassment or assault. Look at what they're doing in Alabama. The RNC is literally funding a child molester. They're literally enabling him. They want him to be in the Senate, right? Like, Democrats can't make Republicans do anything they don't want to do. Right? We can continue to call it out and to call out the hypocrisy. We can't make them do anything, because the fact of the matter is they have the power in Congress. They have the power over themselves. Just because Republicans are complete and utter moral failures doesn't mean we should be too. Listen, as a woman, as a Democrat, I want my party to live up to the values that we claim to be. And if we don't do that, then who the fuck are we? Who the fuck are we?
Exactly. And you know, like you said, Sarah, we can't make Republicans do anything. If they're going to embrace a child molester, I mean, I can't make the RNC stop writing checks.
Right.
You know, but what I can do is make sure that we don't fall prey to the same bullshit that they do. Because I would, I know this is an unpopular opinion, and I'm probably going to get some shit for this, but I would rather lose with dignity than win with sexual predators.
Well, because it's all about changing the culture. And changing culture is swimming upstream, right? Because changing culture is about changing the status quo. And changing the status quo means changing power structures. And that includes, you know, if you have standards, that means you have to apply them evenly. That means you have to do things that are hard. And that means holding your own side. That means holding your friends accountable. That's when you really show your muster. So if you can't hold your friends accountable, then
what are we even doing?
What are you doing? I actually want to read a few tweets from Ijeoma Oluo, because I think she really nailed it. She said, "Hey, if you're angry that liberals are facing more consequences for abusing women than conservatives are, you are angry about the wrong fucking thing." And then she goes on, "Also, if you worry that Dems won't survive without abusers in their ranks, maybe we should try for once. We aren't doing so fucking great with them here. If we can't function as a party without empowering abusers, then the whole thing needs to go down the toilet." and then she says, this, I think, is really what nails it. She says, "Saying that we need to go softer on our values so that we can then win elections and then live up to them later is like saying we can bake a cake with poisoned ingredients, but then we'll frost it with nice sweet icing later and we'll be able to eat it without getting sick."
No, I think that's a beautiful way to put it. I mean, that is it. That's totally it.
That's it. Devin, I'm so knee deep in Twitter that sometimes I just don't have time to meal prep.
Sarah, what are you doing with your life?
I mean, that's a bigger question that I don't think I can answer in this period of time.
Existential.
Basically trying to keep up with all the news. But luckily, one thing that's making my life easier is a meal delivery kit from Sunbasket. You can choose from paleo, lean and clean, gluten-free, vegetarian, and family options. And it's created by an award-winning chef and approved by nutritionists.
Yeah, and I think everyone knows by this point that my favorite part is that you don't have to go to the grocery store. I think we all know how Devin feels about the grocery store, and it's awful. So all the ingredients are pre-measured.
Devin feels about the grocery store exactly how she feels about talking in the third person. Although I think you might like talking in the third person a little more than going to the grocery store.
I think I do. I like everything more than the grocery store.
Yes. Well, I will say too about Sunbasket is that the meals are super delicious and I always have a really good time making them with Nick. Like, it's a really great shared activity that we do together. Plus, I always like to compare and contrast with my mother, #Laura, because she gets different meals than I do. And so we like to share, you know, which meals we like. And it's really fun.
So you can go to sunbasket.com/hellbent today and get $35 off your first order. That's sunbasket.com/hellbent for $35 off. sunbasket.com/hellbent. Today's guest is Jessica Mason Piclow, senior legal analyst at Rewire News, adjunct law professor in Boulder, Colorado, and co-host of Rewire News' new podcast, Boom Lawyered. We are lucky to have her today. Thank you so much for speaking with us, Jessica.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Yeah, this is exciting. I want to jump right in and talk about Masterpiece Cake Shop versus the Colorado Civil Rights Commission. Can you tell us a little bit about this case?
Sure. So about 2012, a same-sex couple went into Masterpiece Cake Shop, a bakery outside of Denver, Colorado, and they were looking for a wedding cake. Same-sex marriage wasn't legal in Colorado yet, but they had gotten married in Massachusetts, and so they were celebrating with family and friends here. They went into the cake shop and started looking around. The bakery had pre-made cakes, and then obviously for weddings and things like that, they also do custom cakes, right?
Right.
And so the couple started looking around and approached the owner and said, hey, we would like a cake for this particular occasion. And the baker said, I won't do that. I have a religious objection to same-sex marriage. I believe it is wrong, and I'm not going to serve you, but you can go find a cake elsewhere. And so the couple, rightly so, was pretty upset about that. I mean, that's a pretty terrible thing to do to someone, is to say, we won't serve you because of who you are and because of the relationship that you're in. And so they made a complaint to the Colorado Civil Rights Commission. And that's not the same thing as a lawsuit. Its commission did an investigation, and they found that the bakery was in violation of the state's civil rights law. And so they issued a finding of cause. And that had some remedial things that the bakery was supposed to do, like train its employees not to discriminate against certain people. The bakery appealed. The Court of Appeals in Colorado kept the underlying ruling. And then they ran this case all the way up to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court sat on it and thought about taking it up 19 times before it did. And when it did take it up, the one, I guess, notable difference in the court and its decision making was the addition of Justice Neil Gorsuch.
I call him Gorsuch an asshole because I'm so mad at him.
He is really terrible. Imani and I often refer to him as Gorsuch. So it's fair. So that's the factual background on it. And then the Supreme Court heard arguments recently on the case, and they'll think about it for a long time and probably tell us what they decide sometime around June.
Right. So from what I understand of the case, the Masterpiece Cake Shop owner, Jack Phillips, is arguing that his First Amendment rights are being violated because the cakes are a form of expression to him.
Yeah. He says he speaks through his cakes,
right,
which let's pin that for a different issue. But yes, he says that the cakes are expressive and therefore protected. And so this is a legal argument that talks about, or that, addresses when the way that we act is considered political speech for purposes of constitutional protection. So think, for example, burning a flag, taking a knee in protest, like the NFL players have done. Those are all things that you don't necessarily say specifically, but it's conduct that expresses a particular image or idea. And so Phillips' argument is that by even designing or conceptualizing these things, because he is a cake artist, not a baker, a cake artist. Sonia Sotomayor had the greatest line in oral arguments about that, because she basically gave a shout out to Subway and was like, well, there are sandwich artists too.
Oh, so good.
So, it gets to just the ridiculousness of the argument, I think.
Right. Is there precedent for an argument like this?
We have exactly the opposite. I mean, so evangelicals have really been trying to weaponize the First Amendment as a way to protect themselves from having to comply with civil rights laws. And so we saw in the 60s and in the 80s and now continuing a series of legal challenges arguing that there's a, religious right to discriminate. And it was really a pivot. It's an interesting pivot. Historically, when it effectively became no longer socially and politically acceptable to be openly segregationist, right, the pendulum has obviously swung back the other way. So, the most specific example we can talk about is a case called Bob Jones University. So there's an evangelical college, and they were getting tax money or tax breaks student aid and things like that. And they didn't want to admit interracial couples. They claimed that they had a religious objection to interracial marriage. And the United States Supreme Court said, nope, you can't do that. You can have that objection, but don't think you then get government benefits as a result of it.
So how does making this case's central argument about the First Amendment differ from making it about religious freedom?
Well, they're really wrapped up in the same thing. And so one of the differences that I think is helpful is when we talk about the Hobby Lobby case. Do you remember that case? That's when they launched a religious objection to covering birth control.
Right.
That case wasn't about the First Amendment. That was about a federal statute, the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. So what we're seeing is this is an extension on the wins that they have gotten. And so there are two First Amendment arguments they make. The speech argument and then the religious expression, religious rights argument. And so the court seemed to be more interested in the speech argument than the religious expression argument. You know, who knows how that works out, but they're all pretty much wrapped up in the same ball of crap.
So I know that in this case, after in 2012, after the Colorado Civil Rights Commission basically told Masterpiece Cake Shop, you can't do that, he decided to stop selling custom cakes altogether. Is that the right thing to do? Did that alleviate any of the problems here?
That kind of temper tantrum is exactly what Alliance Defending Freedom argues, is that it was so bad, the statute is so oppressive on rights that he had no choice but just to stop altogether. I personally think that there's a rich irony in doing that, because if you can stop baking cakes altogether because you have to serve a certain population that you have a moral objection to, then what that means is that that you can serve them, right? It's not really his expression. If it was his expression, then he would continue on baking those cakes. There's no logical sense. I don't know what the court is going to do with that, but I also think it just goes to the pretty transparent nature of what Alliance Defending Freedom is trying to do here.
Yeah. So this case is seen by many as Justice Kennedy's case. And can you tell us why that is and why Justice Kennedy is kind of at the center of this?
Mm-hmm. Well, since the addition of Justice Gorsuch and the refusal by Republicans to actually do their job and continue with the nomination and confirmation hearings of Merrick Garland, the Supreme Court generally has lurched further to the right. I know we don't think of it as, you know, we think of he replaced Scalia, but, you know, Gorsuch is much more conservative than Scalia, which should terrify everybody.
Seriously.
So there's that factor, which means that there are four solid votes against the couple just based on ideology alone. And we know that because in opinion after opinion after opinion, where LGBTQ issues and civil rights issues generally have come up, Alito, Roberts, and Thomas have always sided against civil rights. Gorsuch will as well. Kennedy is in the middle because this is the combination of two of his legacies. So he has really prided himself on advancing the law around LGBTQ rights. He is, you know, largely credited for being the moderate voice on the court that has, you know, struck down sodomy laws, that helped in U.S. v. Windsor get same-sex marriage recognized on the federal level, and then Obergefell at the state level. And this is a legacy that he's proud of. He is also at the center in the culture wars of the religious right. And we see this in his abortion rights jurisprudence. I mean, he is responsible for, you know, making up the idea of abortion regret as a way for states to legislate back reproductive rights. So this is a case that is really bringing his two legacy points together.
Speaking of Obergefell, you wrote that Kennedy's opinion was inherently conservative, even though it ended up allowing same-sex marriages and four states to recognize same-sex marriages, because his opinion, quote, overlooks all of the actual ways the law continues to allow actual discrimination.
Mm-hmm.
So do you think that his opinion in the Obergefell case gives clues as to how he might rule in this case? I mean, AKA, I'm asking you to quote your most recent article, read the Roberts Court tea leaves.
yeah, no, that's a great question. So, I do think it's going to impact. So Kennedy's decision in Obergefell is really grounded in this idea of dignity, and that discrimination against LGBTQ people is, in fact, the state taking away those people's dignity. And I think that that's, frankly, really true. And in civil rights laws, the idea of a dignity harm is a real thing, right? There is emotional and cultural and psychological harm that comes from not having equal access to certain things. It's, right. again, the way that the state says you're a second-class citizen. So there's that part of it. But what ADF argued in Masterpiece Cake Shop is that dignity cuts both ways, is that the court needs to recognize the dignity interests of evangelical Christians. Now, again, that's really a Trojan horse argument, because evangelical Christians are not a historically discriminated against class. You're not supposed to discriminate against religion, but that's not what's happening here. Kennedy and the conservatives may feel like the state overstepped its bounds in certain areas. So if I had to read the tea leaves with Kennedy, and I'm just putting the caveat that, like, you know, I'm really going out on a limb here. I do think he sides with the baker, but I don't think we get a really sweeping ruling. I think what happens is that he says the commission overstepped their bounds here. But I think ultimately the statute, the civil rights statute at hand, will still stand. I believe that he, through the questioning, understood that there is, you know, at least he understood it as a tension. And he was very concerned about the idea of using religion as a source to cut back very legitimate civil rights advances that are needed in this country and were needed and will continue to be needed in the future. So, I that's ultimately one part of it. I do expect a sort of mushy mouth ruling on that. I also am looking out for Chief Justice John Roberts. He has always been very slippery in civil rights cases, and in particular, I'm thinking of his decision in Shelby v. Holder County, which is the Voter Rights Act, where he effectively upheld the Voting Rights Act, but the decision gutted it. It made enforcement of it very difficult, if not impossible in many ways, and also set up a lot of clues for conservatives to make further challenges to the Voting Rights Act. And so that's the bad news that I, you know, in terms of looking out for it. Will Roberts get his way, and, you know, will he be able to pull Kennedy along that far? I don't know. I think it's a concern, but I also feel I did get the sense that Kennedy's concern for what this would do for particularly LGBTQ rights was real.
So you said what you think is that Roberts is going to say that the Colorado Civil Rights Commission overstepped their bounds. So mm-hmm. that sort of feels like bullshit, and goes back to this idea of affirming same-sex marriages while not addressing actual discrimination. So if he's saying that they're overstepping their bounds, like, how are we supposed to sort of enforce this idea of you can't refuse to serve people based on their sexual orientation?
Well, I think the conservatives and Roberts would be fine if we couldn't.
Right.
I think that that's just that's a really important point. And the idea that evangelicals are discriminated against in this culture is, again, one that they have been pounding on for decades. It's bullshit. It's just not true. Like, right. Look at who is in charge. You know, Alliance Defending Freedom has an entire pipeline of lawyers who have now been you know, given spots in the Trump administration, right, in, you know, places like the Department of Education, in Health and Human Services. And so it's no coincidence that the Department of Education, for example, pulls its Title IX guidance, both on how to address and how to make sure that transgender students have equal access in education, but also how the DOE is going to enforce sex assault claims on right. campus.
Right.
You know, these are all very much tied into evangelical notions of women and their appropriate roles. And so, you know, there is doublespeak going on in all of these cases.
Right. So going back for just a minute to the fact that they're arguing a First Amendment issue mm-hmm. with the expression that comes from baking a cake, which, okay. What are some of the other implications of an argument like this moving forward? I mean, is it going to open up what expression is, do you think? Do you think there'll be similar cases that follow? What do you think the implications are?
A couple. So, you know, and they'll go from sort of really legal nerdy to like practical. So okay. One of the things that Obergefell didn't answer is what level of constitutional scrutiny the court should use when analyzing claims that, you know, a particular law is discriminatory against the LGBTQ population. And that's terrible because that means that now conservatives get to shape that. And that was one of the things that Kennedy's decision was really bad in as a result of that. So it was clear, and it is clear in this case, that what the conservatives are hoping to do those decisions that is law more or less in name only. Similar again to attacks on Roe, right? Like we think about Roe and Casey as a fundamental civil rights decision. This is sort of the parallel going up there. So that's one possibility. The other possibility is that they will craft out of thin air a broad religious exemption to general civil rights laws, which is again precisely what they're trying to get here. And they have been trying to get for decades. The worst case scenario at, you know, in sort of taking this logic to its extreme with in terms of legal consequences, is that state level civil rights laws end up on the chopping block, the sort of inverse of what happened with Proposition 8, mm-hmm. right? So Proposition 8, we got a win in Obergefell, and as a result, that created the opportunity to start challenging and knocking down the statewide bans on same-sex marriage. Think of that in the opposite.
I mean, it's a really scary notion and a really, I think, testament to the fact that the court has so much power in cases like this. To close out, at the end of every show, Sarah and I like to do what we call gratitude check to take stock of the good things happening in these dark political times. So, Jessica, what are you grateful for today? And it can be anything, big or small.
Sure.
Cute, fluffy animals, Netflix, anything.
Okay, so I have two, and one does involve cute, fluffy animals. generally speaking, as dark as it is, I often, like, it's important because this is hard work, right? I really feel supported and really energized by my community. It's, you know, one of those things that's like, we're hunkering down, but we're all for each other, and that is, I think, a beautiful thing to see because, you know, we need each other. So every single day, I am grateful for my people,
right.
First and foremost. And then out here in Colorado, they are just working on their next round of snow dog rescues. And so there are a lot of puppies out in the snow being trained to be, you know, good, even better dogs. They're all good dogs to start with. But so anytime the Colorado Press reports on the puppies being trained and offers pictures of them, my heart swells.
Oh,
and so, you know,
okay.
Puppies in the snow for everyone.
Seriously, that's amazing. Those are both fantastic gratitude checks. So thank you so much, Jessica, for joining today. You can hear her with the fabulous Imani Gandhi on their new podcast for Rewired News, Boom Lawyered, and it is fantastic. And you can also follow her on Twitter at HedgeMommy?
Correct.
Oh, all right. So thank you again. Thank you for illuminating these very complicated issues. It was great to have you on.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me on. And I sincerely try not to be so depressing.
Oh, don't worry. Depressing is sort of our 2017 aesthetic here.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you. You all are fantastic. And this was amazing. Thank you.
All right, Sarah, I absolutely loved talking to Jessica Piclo. She's so smart and just so knowledgeable. The Masterpiece Cake Shop case is very interesting, and there's a lot going on. And so I'm glad she could give us some clarity as to that.
Well, there's so much on the line, I feel like, with that case.
Yes.
And I think it could set a really dangerous precedent for a lot of different things.
Absolutely. So she was so great in clarifying that for us. So now let's jump into our gratitude check. So Sarah, what are you grateful for today?
Well, I think one of the news stories that I've been keeping an eye on has been all the monuments that Trump has been trying to cut. And I have to say that my gratitude check relates to, again, a little bit of a legal matter here. Had to go legal.
You and your independent judiciary.
Yeah. Well, it hasn't reached the independent judiciary yet, but there have been three lawsuits filed to block Trump's reductions. He wants to cut the Utah Bears Ears monument by 85%. And the Grand Staircase Escalante National Monuments by about 50%. So the land that's designated for them. And that is some fucking bullshit. But luckily, groups have already stepped in to slap down some lawsuits. So I'm grateful for that. So tribal leaders, environmentalists, and others argue that Trump doesn't have the authority and that his move jeopardizes a wealth of Native American artifacts, dinosaur fossils, and rugged spaces. So they're like, fuck you, dude. You can't do this. We're going to take your ass to court. So Patagonia, actually, the company Patagonia is one of the people suing him. And they actually put on the front page of their website, "The president stole your land." Like, they just full on were like middle fingers up to Trump. And they called Trump's actions illegal and described his announcement on Monday as the largest elimination of protected land in American history.
Yes, that is true.
Yeah.
You know, it's also worth pointing out that there are some problems with Patagonia's, you know, assertion, like taking your land. A lot of Indigenous and Native American activists were a little upset, you know, but because they didn't acknowledge that the land was originally taken from them, Indigenous Americans,
historically,
right? But I think the point they were making was clear: is that President Trump is completely overreaching in his trying to cut these monuments.
And I just want to read a quote from Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke, because it's just so rich. It's like, really, dude? So he said, quote, "I think it's shameful and appalling that they would blatantly lie in order to gain money in their coffers." To which I say, look at who you work for. Like, can I just say, like, emoluments clause? Like, that's exactly what Trump is doing. Trump is like enriching himself via the presidency every day. And we don't even talk about it because it's not even like the 10th most ridiculous thing he does on any given day.
Oh, God.
Which is
so
just
true.
Like depressing, right?
It is.
But then is. A Patagonia spokesperson clapped back. Corley Kenna said, quote, "It's odd that Ryan Zinke has no problem with special interests when they're paying for his private jets." Remember, because like Ryan Zinke was caught up in that controversy that got former Secretary of Health and Human Services Tom Price fired.
Yep.
So I thought that was good. The spokesperson said, "We have been fighting for these lands for decades so that hunters, fishers, hikers, and everyone else can use them and help us protect them." So, yeah, I think it's good to see a coalition of people who care about this stuff fight the Trump administration on this front. And, you know, I think it's just one other example of how trash this administration is. I mean, they're coming for everything, because we've talked about Bear's Ears before on this podcast and how really the aim, I think, here is to use it for drilling.
Yes. Oh, yeah. And, you know, and I would like to quote the ever brilliant Sarah Lerner here. Okay. Elections have motherfucking consequences.
Yes. Oh. Anyway, Devin, so what are you grateful for today?
I'm gonna get a little depressing.
You know what? Gratitude checks run the gamut, you know?
They do.
Like,
they do.
There are things that we're grateful for that that root themselves in things that are hard.
Exactly. So mine is personal again today. My mom was just rushed to the ICU. She had what they think is the beginning stages of liver failure. She has alcohol-induced hepatitis. I mean, my mom is a lifelong alcoholic, and it's been a really long journey to get to a healthy place myself and deal with my relationship with her. And then, you know, this has been a cycle. My mom's been to the hospital. I can't even count how many times in the last 4 or 5 years. She's attempted suicide. She's fallen. She's, you know, and then, you know, liver failure now. And it's really scary. I mean, my mom's not old. She's 55. And I mean, she's in the ICU, basically incapacitated because of this disease, you know, this alcoholism. And what I think I'm grateful for is not only my support network, which is vast and really the only thing that gets me through the day sometimes, but also the fact that I am taking steps to break this cycle.
Yeah.
Alcoholism, they call it a family disease. It's also not completely understood how it works. They say it could be genetic. It could be environmental. It's always both.
It's
always both. But I think what I'm grateful for is that I'm able to look at the situation and instead of repeating this cycle, repeating this pattern, I don't want to be my mom. And I don't want to put myself in that situation. It's a complicated situation. It's complicated because, you know, it's hard to have a, I'll call it non-traditional relationship with your parents, because of a disease like alcoholism. But the fact that I am making strides to make sure that I don't do this in my life and I don't succumb to the same sort of diseases that my mom did. And I'm grateful that I have a therapist and I've been diagnosed properly. I'm taking medication for issues that can really contribute to alcoholism. You know, a lot of times it has to do with self-medicating, especially with something like I have, like bipolar disorder. So the fact that I have the support, the fact that I have healthcare, and the fact that I am making a real attempt at breaking the cycle is what I'm grateful for today.
Devin, I'm so, so sorry to hear what you're going through. And I think that's beautiful. I mean, I have alcoholism in my family too. And it's something that I think about and you know, it's in the back of my mind, always thinking about breaking the cycle because it is a cycle. Yeah. I mean, we kind of briefly touched upon that cycle of abuse earlier in the podcast, and it's something that's so real. Yeah. And I think people who don't have that experience in their family might not understand it.
Right.
But it's, when you have family members or a family member who has something like that or has gone through something like that, it's what you know, and you have to you develop certain patterns that you aren't even necessarily aware of that you have to unlearn,
and your own like defenses that go up and how to start to dismantle those.
I read something about like adult children of alcoholics and I learned that like sort of my type, I'm like an overachiever type because that's like my form of escape.
Right.
You know, like that's how you sort of deal and cope is that's how you escape the sort of negativity that comes with dealing with someone in your life who is an alcoholic, and that's your coping mechanism. And you don't even think about that. because it's so right. endemic to who you are. But I think that is just an admirable journey and an yeah. admirable thing to be doing yeah, with your life is to be breaking that cycle, because then, right. you know, you have a child and you're setting right. up your kid to have a healthier and more fulfilling life.
Exactly. Exactly. So it's still touch and go with my mom. She's in critical condition. They're not sure if she's going to pull through this time. But you know, there's a saying in AA and Al-Anon, you know, maybe this time, you know, you have to keep the faith, and, you know, people are always worth attempting to save. So, you know, thoughts, prayers, high fives, anything that you have, you know, keep my mom in your thoughts.
Okay, Devin, so it's Thursday, and you know we love doing our Hellion of the Week. So who got it this week?
Okay, so this week is a woman named Keisha Lance Bottoms, and she is poised to be Atlanta's second ever Black female mayor.
Yes, I was following this race on Twitter the other night, and this one was a nail biter.
It really was. Out of 92,000 ballots cast, she won by 759 votes.
Wow.
So if you ever are like, does my vote really count? Yes.
It fucking does. It really fucking does.
So the election will be certified either Saturday or Monday, this coming Monday. And then her opponent, Mary Norwood, will have 48 hours to request a recount, which she is likely to do. But it's a great win. It's a great moment. Like you said, it was a nail biter. Keisha Lance Bottoms was endorsed by the outgoing mayor, Kasim Reed. You know, this is just, it's great. It's the second Black female mayor ever of Atlanta.
I think Cory Booker and Kamala Harris also yes. Campaigned for her.
So, you know, I think this is just a great example of how local politics is really sexy.
Yes.
Also, I love all of these women running and winning all over the place mm-hmm. and just running. And it's just, it's, you know.
And Democrats, too. Democrats.
And Democrats, too. Exactly. So welcome to the motherfucking matriarchy.
And I love this quote from Keisha Lance Bottoms in her speech. She said, "For all the little girls out there who need somebody to believe that you're better than your circumstances, I want you to remember that Black girl magic is real." All right, Devin, so let's get into our action item. So what can our Hellions do after they finish listening to the show?
Right. So kind of a broken record on this. We've had very similar action items for the last couple of weeks. Obviously, we have the tax bill that is going into a conference committee. So it's not over yet. It's really important that you call your representatives and you call your senators and tell them that this tax bill is bullshit.
Yeah. And I will say it's interesting because I saw Jon Favreau tweet that there's kind of this interesting scenario in which if Doug Jones wins his Senate seat, and Susan Collins sees that she's been fucking swindled, then Bob Corker stays true, then this tax bill might die.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think this, segues nicely into our next one, which is donate, volunteer, get involved with Doug Jones's campaign, the non-pedophile candidate in Alabama.
But before you say that, I will also say that California Republicans in the House are great members to target.
Oh, yes.
Because they are particularly vulnerable and swayable as well.
Right. And also in the current version of the tax bill, Californians have a lot to lose.
Exactly.
So they're really good people to target. So, yeah, like you said, Sarah, it's pretty clear that they're moving quickly on this tax bill. But the election of Doug Jones could make the math for the GOP even more difficult. You know, because it would make the split 51-49, as if you needed another reason to vote for Jones, again, the non-pedophile candidate.
Yeah, and just like non-bigot, you know?
Non-bigot,
non-pedophile, like, right. What more do you want, you know?
I mean, really. And then I have one new one. The House just passed a concealed carry law that requires states to recognize out-of-state concealed carry permits. So it's a big fucking mess. This is a terrible bill. And so even states that don't allow concealed carry or have a very narrow scope of concealed carry would have to recognize out-of-state permits. It's a bad plan. So you need to call your senators. You need to make sure this dies in the Senate. I reached out to Shannon Watts, who's the founder of Moms Demand Action for Common Sense Gun Reform. And she said that Tester in Montana and Donnelly in Indiana are key senators to call. So if you are a hellion in Montana or Indiana, just make sure that you are telling them that this is not an okay bill to pass.
Yeah. Good insider info, Devin.
Thank you. Thank you. And then finally, the deadline to register for the ACA is December 15th. So you can go to getamericacovered.org for information, and healthcare.gov is where you sign up. So sign up, get your friends and family to sign up. The deadline's coming up. So.
Yes, we will keep on repeating that message until we reach the deadline, because it's so crucial, so important. And I will say, as a sick person who has health insurance, I cannot emphasize how crucial that is enough.
Absolutely.
So Devin, let's close out our show with a quote, as we like to do. And we felt that it was appropriate to do so with one from Tarana Burke, who is the creator of the Me Too movement. She says, quote, "Sexual harassment does bring shame. And I think it's really powerful that this transfer is happening, that these women are able not just to share their shame, but to put shame where it belongs, on the perpetrator." And I think that's exactly sort of encapsulates the power of this Me Too movement. And, you know, we talked about where this movement has limits. I think there's been fair critiques of where it needs to go. And but I think Tarana Burke has definitely started something powerful. And I will say that I think it's important to emphasize it's not just women. You know, Terry Crews was included, for example, in this Time cover story. And he, I think, I've just been so in awe of him. He has stood so strong, and he has been, he has had so many people turn his back on him. There was a story, I think, in BET about that. And, he has not backed down, and I really applaud Terry Crews, and I applaud, all victims who have come forward, and all victims who, you know, who might not feel ready to share their stories, but who are working through their pain, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And that I love that we're making a shift to put the shame on the perpetrators, like Tarana Burke said.
Yeah, and working to change the culture, as painful as that is. And I think we really touched upon it in our main news block, and that involves holding the people that we call our friends and our quote unquote allies accountable.
Yeah. Even, yeah, to make an omelet, you got to crack a few eggs.
Yeah, that's true. Well, Devin, this was quite a show. I know that there's a lot going on for you personally. So Hellions, next week is a little TBD, I think, for us, because we don't know if Devin might have to fly to Florida or whatnot, but we will keep you posted.
For more information on today's episodes, including links to the articles we discussed and additional resources, you can visit us online at hellbentpodcast.com.
And you can follow us across social media platforms. We're at Hellbent Pod on Twitter and Instagram. We're Hellbent Podcast on Facebook. And if you want to join our Facebook group, we are facebook.com/groups/dickwadsbegone. You can also follow myself, Sarah Lerner, on Twitter, at Sarah Lerner. And you can also follow Devin on Twitter, at Devin Handy.
We also have a Patreon if you would like to support us that way.
Yes, and you can find us on patreon.com/hellbentpodcast, and your support would mean a lot.